This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nickturn and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nickturn and Duncan Trussell.
Walking each other home is an exploration of the many ways we cultivate wisdom, compassion, and love in our lives. Mirabai Bush talks with some of her many diverse friends about what they're learning now from their spiritual paths and practices. If you would like to support this podcast, please visit BeHereNowNetwork.com/Mirabai.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mirabai Bush. Welcome to Walking Each Other Home. Our guest today is the perfect guide to this theme of walking together. He's just written a book in which he says that we're all on a journey of spirit here on planet Earth, and we can help each other along in many ways. Come out and take me by my hand. Our guest is John Densmore, well known as the drummer for The Doors, and now author of The Seekers, Meetings with Remarkable Musicians and Other Artists. He's also written other books, poems, plays, and music, and been an actor in plays and films. I first met John at a dinner with Ram Dass and some others, and as the dinner was about to begin, he pulled out a drum and recited a Jim Morrison poem. It was divine. So John's going to read some poems for us today and talk about the book and other things. So welcome, John.
Thank you, Mirabai. So since I talk so much about silence in this book, I thought I'd do this interview without any words.
It's perfect.
Here we go. All right, now I'm going to go back and on my word and talk a lot. This is a Tibetan bowl that Manos gave me, a flute player for Deva Pramal and Mitten. So let's see. I don't think Maharishi knew it, but he was the Doors press agent. We met at his meditation class. This was about a year before the Beatles got onto Maharishi. And, you know, we were fooling around with then legal psychedelics and thought that meditation would be a less shattering route, longer, but less shattering. And I was in a small room with Maharishi and wow, the love vibe was just palpable. You know, I was used to priests in black
with me
high
too.
Collar. And, you know, LSD had quite a bit more impact than the communion wafer. And so I have a Neem Karoli Baba thing around my neck right now.
Oh.
And I was not that aware of him until several years ago when I met you guys. But boy, it's growing on me. So I just wanted to say that I can feel a love channel coming through him to Ram Dass, to Krishna Dass, and Mirabai Bush. I feel it. And it's a real blessing.
It's the highest compliment you could make. Thank you.
I wanted to just say that. And to get political, Father Greg Boyle is the LA wonderful priest who's worked with gang kids. And recently he said about the pandemic and everything, he said, every day gets a little closer to the new normal. And he said, the new normal will have more love. So there it is.
Wow.
And that seems kind of ironic because today the Congress is fighting over whether to impeach our president or not. And I still believe that the love vibe is what's coming, you know. Michael Mead, a wonderful mythologist friend of mine, said that we're in a global initiation. And, you know, initiations, you got to go out alone, like we're all separate right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then the descent, and we're in the descent. And then you come up, and we will come up. And you come up, hopefully, with a new vision, because that's why you went through this descent. And so, anyway, that's it. You can grill me now.
Oh, that's pretty great.
love goddess.
So poems later?
A little later, yeah.
Okay. You tell me when. I have some questions. I even have notes. oh yeah, this is good. Your first chapter is about your mother, which I loved. I thought that was the best. And you talk about your mother's heartbeat as the first sound, or the mother's heartbeat as the first sound we hear, the first percussion. And I watched Elvis Mitchell of the Times called your mother your first collaborator. Isn't that what he said? While you were in the womb and your own heart started beating. And so you were playing together. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
You've called the womb, and I love this too, the ultimate homeland security. It's really good. When you wrote about Elvin Jones, your great inspiration, you said he was channeling the pulse of the universe, the heartbeat. So my question is, and why is this important in music? Why is percussion important in music?
Well, the first drum beat all of us heard was in the womb, our mom, her heart. And so if it's a duet or a 40-piece orchestra, they're all trying to play as one person. They're trying to get back to that heartbeat because that's what makes us dance or feel secure or whatever. It's just calming. I don't know what it is. And so that's what we're all after. And we had our own little heartbeat too in the womb, you know, so we already had Elvin Jones polyrhythms,
you know?
but the main thing is the pulse. It has to be kind of, once you started a song, either whatever tempo, a ballad or real fast salsa, it has to stay with that same groove, that same pulse. You cannot speed up or slow down. If you do, everyone will stop dancing, or they go, what happened? You know? And so that's the homeland security, just the security of a solid groove. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, kind of. it does, really. It's so, I love it because it begins the connection between the spirit and, you know, this journey we set out on, and music. It's all there from the very beginning. Yeah.
It's funny, you know, I started this book years ago. I wanted to do a tip of the hat to various artists who fed me. And then I thought I'd write about my mom because she encouraged my piano playing and drumming. And then I thought, oh, let's make it autobiographical. I'll put her first. Then I realized, wait a minute. Of course she's first. I was in her womb. She started it all for me, you know? I mean, I never initially thought I'd have a book with my mom and Lou Reed in the same
thing,
but here we are.
It's
real diverse, but that's the Doors. The Doors are very eclectic. We've got blues and flamenco, and Jim knew every writer on the planet, and I had jazz, and that's the melting pot. That's the American gumbo, that it's pretty delicious and it's diverse, and diversity equals strength. That's a little
little
soapbox statement for the Trumpsters.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved that you were there in Jamaica just as reggae was getting started. That was cool. But given your appreciation of all these different American forms of music.
And reggae was so interesting as a drummer because, as Marley sang, playing a rhythm fighting against a system, they turned the beat around. I mean, rumor is that they heard it up in Florida broadcast on a little radio, and they thought the beat was the other way around. Well, whatever made them kind of flip the beat around, I don't know. It kind of, for drummers, rearranges your brain cells a little bit. And it's really wonderful. And then, of course, Marley's visionary lyrics are just worldly and humanitarian.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just love him. Yeah.
Well, now, I noticed all through your book and in your playing that the role of silence is really important to you. You write about the silence and space in Willie Nelson's music. I loved that Willie was in there. And about the balance between silence and sound. And you wrote that it's about breathing in and breathing out, which I know more about than I do about music. You wrote your science mentor, Neil deGrasse Tyson, saying that dark matter, the space between stars and planets, is as important as matter. And so would you talk about this and the space between notes? Why is it important in music?
You know, if you look at musical notation, it's just a bunch of math, really, all those notes. What turns it into music is the feeling you put in between the numbers. Really, you're just counting when you read music. But that's why the space in between each beat is so important. Like to a drummer, if you're pushing the beat, then it's kind of polka or militaristic. If you're laying back, then it's the blues. You're waiting to the last second to play the next beat so the sadness can get in there, you know? And so it's like Gustavo Dudamel is the new young conductor of the LA Philharmonic.
Yeah.
I could not believe it when I saw him conduct and he finishes 20 minutes of Beethoven, a lot of sound. And then he's still holding his arms up in the air. So we know we're not supposed to applaud yet. And for a full minute or two, there's silence. Oh my God, glorious silence. And then he puts his hands down and then we applaud. I think there's a sentence in there I'm rather proud of in his chapter, something about out of Neil deGrasse's black hole, out of silence, music starts, a rock song or a symphony orchestra, it doesn't matter. If it's quality music, whatever genre, then the silence after hearing it will be deeper. So that's that thing about hitting a gong and listening to meditation. And there's something deep in there. And Ram Dass talks about it a lot in his stuff. I think I quoted him about, and Gary Shandling talks about the mm-hmm. in the silence. So there's something in there, and you know about it more than anybody, Miss Mindful.
Well, I'll tell you, I know more about it now than a few years ago, because after writing that book with Ram Dass, since yeah. he has aphasia now, and yeah. so there are these long pauses.
Right.
It was amazing. Just I was completely comfortable with it, of course, because I've been with him so much, but I would yeah. just like drop into the silence and engaging a subject like death, or like we're talking about the spirit, the life, you know, having those silences between the words was such a gift.
You know, maybe I should read that little section you wanted me to read.
Oh, yeah. Oh, about Ram Dass. That'd be great. Yeah.
Should I do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
That'd be great.
Let's see. Yeah, you said page 177.
It's the beginning of his. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right. Here we go. Ready?
Yep.
Chapter 23, Ram Dass, Wheelchair Mystic. The quieter you become, the more you can hear. Unfortunately, I met Ram Dass, the author of the best-selling countercultural Bible, Be Here Now, after he had his stroke. Or maybe the timing wasn't so unfortunate. As he said, my speech pattern was severely impaired and I considered not speaking publicly anymore since the words came so slowly. But people insisted that my halting new voice enabled them to concentrate on the silence between the words. Sound familiar? The silence between the sounds of music makes the music breathe like human beings. I'm certainly not the fastest drummer in the world, but my exposure to all genres of music, classical, rock, blues, folk, country, has taught me to play with as much attention to dynamics as possible. Dynamics elicit the maximum emotions from the listener as well as from me. If you play with the full palette of sounds, even down to silence, you produce anger and peace and everything in between, the total human experience. Quoting Ram Dass again, now that I speak more slowly, people tend to finish my sentences for me and then to answer questions for themselves. Though I once used silence as a teaching method, it now arises without my control and allows for a sense of emptiness, an emptiness that listeners can use as a doorway to their inner quiet. The quieter you become, the more you can hear. Isn't that the transcendence we're all looking for? Through music, books, art, we're trying to stop time and get a little relief from the rat race. Like Bob Marley said, there's a horse race, a human race, but this here is a rat race. Even in comedy, another art form, some of the best comedians are reaching for the same thing. In an interview, the brilliant comedian Mark Maron said to the comedic genius Gary Shandling, "I think you've changed the game with how the audience is willing to be let moments sit with comedy. You and Rip Torn would just stand by the monitor on the Larry Sanders Show and nothing would be said for 20 seconds. And of course, in TV, dead air is nothing short of death. The truth actually is in the silence," Gary responded. "So coming back to the other problem in life, people are afraid to have a..." Gary stopped talking for about 10 seconds. "Silent moment like that there," then stopped again. Remember, this was an interview, but Maron was right there with him. Gary finally continued, "And in the silence right there is all the truth and all the wisdom in the world. You got to stop talking, jumping up, and giving your opinions quickly." "Why is that?" Maron asked. "Addiction. Addiction to preventing one to have to discover the true self. A defensive reaction to not having to go any deeper. Art brings these truths to the surface." Or, as the equally brilliant record producer Rick Rubin said, "Music has altered my consciousness. It takes me out of myself. You can't even put into words its effect. Art and meditation make a space where we can go deeper with ourselves and find our core. Similarly, Ram Dass's silences were music to my ears." I had met Ram Dass's sidekick, Krishna Das, who invited me to sit in with him at one of his chanting concerts. KD has become the Mick Jagger of the yoga music world. Nobody has pipes like his. Even Sting is a fan. Rick Rubin speaks of Krishna Das's voice as having an unparalleled authority. "Like me, Ram Dass and Krishna Das, had their spiritual life jump-started by psychedelics, but they quickly found out that meditation and chanting offered a less shattering route. It's a longer path, but after all, we're in it for the long run, unlike our musical peers who got caught in a deep roller coaster dive after that peak high, found the descent too steep, and bailed." Yeah. Segues right into Jim Morrison and Janis Joplin, huh?
That, before I forget, that reminds me that you recorded the book too with you reading it, right?
That's correct, Mirabai. And also I added a bunch of music. I put in some drum beats. I put in a little piano playing behind my mom's telling me to practice my scales and... So, yeah, I think it's pretty
That's
cool.
That's great. Thanks. So it's on Audible, probably, is it?
I hope so. It's just getting going.
Okay. But it's great to hear you read it. Wow. There was a lot in there. Yeah. And,
you know, Jim, it's funny. He went to a Maharishi meeting. He wanted to look into Maharishi's eyes and see if he had any truth. And he said, "Yeah, he's got something, but I'm not going to meditate." Ah, too bad. Too bad.
I'm not surprised.
Then it's interesting. It's interesting. I write about the Dalai Lama, which most people would think, you know, that I wouldn't say what actually happened, but I kind of, went beyond the bounds and did the same thing and looked into his eyes, like, "Prove you've got, you're as great as your rep." And, you know, he kind of whisked me away. And it was really interesting because it felt like a Zen slap. And I was teary the whole friggin' night after that I got what was right. You know, it's the amazing windows of the soul are precious doorways.
Isn't it? Yeah, Ram Dass's eyes really got, I mean, that entry got really deep in the last, a couple of years before he.
Yeah. You know, I just a week or two ago watched Raghu's little 10-minute video of Ram Dass in Maui, I think it is.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I myself started getting teary just looking at him, looking at me.
Exactly. No,
so that's what I meant by the beginning of this talk that, this guy on my chest, he's channeling through folks, and it's palpable and it's beautiful.
Yeah. It's still amazing to me after all these years. Yeah.
And my girlfriend or my fiance Ildiko, whom you met at the dinner,
yeah,
she said, "Oh, great, Mirabai, there'll be a lot of love." And I said, "Exactly." And she's sensitive to that. So.
There is a lot of love. No, I am so grateful to you for this book. Is so beautiful. I loved your other book too, but and I was just. It took me back reading the chapter about Janis Joplin. You know, I remember being in graduate school and she came to Buffalo and I just remember that feeling of, and with other musicians during that time and other times, that feeling of somebody knows, somebody else knows, you know, someone else knows about like the expansion of your being out into the universe. You know, somebody knows the depth of passion that's trying to express itself. You know, I just, you made me really think about music and what, why it was important in my life as not a musician, you know, and what happened to me through music. And then, as I said, I was listening to The Doors for the last couple of days. I thought, well, I just get in the mood, you know, so, but oh my goodness, you know, some of it that where the music goes so far that you just have to let go. And letting go is such a part of spiritual practice, letting go of your attachments, letting go of your desires, you know, and letting go of who you think you are. And I realized that that's one of the ways I first learned to let go.
Listening to music?
Yeah, and listening to you, your music.
And I try to say in this book, you know, if you make a space every day to do conscious walking or paint a painting that no one will see or play your piano in a closet that no one will hear, you're in the same zone as these icons and you don't have to climb the charts. And we're all seekers, you know? So
I love that. I was going to say at the end, but I will now. What's gotten you through this COVID period? I mean, you do have a partner and that helps. Some people are just by themselves, but it's been a struggle for everybody. And what has gotten you through? And I think it's important that you are a great artist, but it's, you said in the book too, that you don't have to be in order to have art be a help through on the path or during hard times.
Yeah. Well, art has helped me through this, that's for sure. I did a, right at the beginning of the pandemic, I did a YouTube 15-minute poetry reading of like one Mary Oliver poem I'm going to read at the end of our little talk here. But several of those poems, a couple of hers, and poetry, you know, is so, it's kind of like the skeleton of language. It's trying to go as deep as the silence in meditation. It's searching for the words that are just, I don't know what it is. Like, for example, Galway Connell, you know, you sent me a photograph of his collected works. That book, I'm going to read one of those poems. I cannot read any of those poems without weeping. Now, what is that? Well, it's getting down to something so deep. I don't know, some deep humanity that connects us all.
So. Yeah. It's so far out that you said that. About poetry, when I first went to India, it was the first time I ever meditated, did anything like that. And I was in the fourth year of my PhD in American literature and poetry. So I've been thinking about it a lot. And then we sat, Ram Dass was there too, and Krishna Dass, and we sat for like a month every day in silence from early in the morning till night. And wow. With great instruction from a teacher named Goenka. But after a while, you know, and then I was young, I could sit in lotus position, you know, we all did. Yeah. And, but at a certain point, like after weeks of doing this, I had this, what seemed like this incredible revelation that, oh, I thought, a poem, this is what a poem is, that my energy was so focused and wow. and centered and strong. And I thought, oh my God, this is what a poem is. It's words in that very concentrated at their purest and most intense expression, you know. But I don't think I've told it to anybody else, because after I got out, it was a little bit like, you know, when you pick up a stone on the beach on psychedelics and it looks like you can see the whole universe in it, and then you get home and it's just a stone.
Yeah. That's just beautiful, and I totally get it, and I believe in it, you know. Wow. Mm. So let me, we're talking about the love vibe. Yeah, I'm going to read a little tiny short poem by Robert Bly, the poet, getting down to the essence.
Right.
This goes out to you and John, is it? Who's your husband?
Oh, EJ.
EJ.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm sorry. Was that your first husband? Whoops.
Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot.
Okay.
You understand these things, I know.
I do. Well, Ildiko and I have been trying to get married. We've both been married three times previous. Oh, my God. You know, I tried to, my parents were married 40 years. It just wasn't my road. And due to this damn pandemic, we have postponed it three times now.
I was married twice before, EJ. And
yeah.
They and I got married after 32 years of living together beach, on the vineyard. So you have time.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been together 12. So we've bumped it because, you know, what is a wedding with social distancing?
Exactly.
Boring.
Yes. Agreed.
All right. So this goes out to EJ and you and Ildiko and me. Little Shorty by Bly. It's called What We Provide. Oh, I'm going to get my glasses so I can see the damn thing. Yeah. Every breath taken in by the man who loves and the woman who loves goes to fill the water tank where the spirit horses drink. Yeah. Right?
Never heard that one. That is so great.
That's the love channel.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
You want to do some more poems? Or
well, all right. Since we're talking about how powerful poetry is, this is a Galway Canal poem. And I think this kind of sums up my entire new book. It's called Wait. This is, I mean, this guy, wow.
Whew. Yeah.
He's a Pulitzer dude. You know, I mean, even a deeper poet than Robert Bly, God, he gets to the essence I met him. He's very shy. Mm-hmm. And Robert is the opposite of shy, but he was a wonderful mentor for us 60s males who grew our hair long and integrated feminine values, but needed a little huevos to go with it, you know. All right, Galway Canal. It's called Wait. Wait for now. Distrust everything if you have to, but trust the hours. Haven't they carried you everywhere up to now? Personal events will become interesting again. Hair will become interesting. Pain will become interesting. Buds that open out of season will become interesting. Secondhand gloves will become lovely again. Their memories are what give them the need for other hands. And the desolation of lovers is the same, : that enormous emptiness carved out of such tiny beings as we are asks to be filled. The need for the new love is faithfulness to the old. Wait, don't go too early. You're tired, but everyone's tired, but no one is tired enough. Only wait a little and listen. Music of hair, music of pain, music of looms weaving all our loves again. Be there to hear it. It will be the only time, most of all, to hear the flute of your whole existence rehearsed by the sorrows, play itself into total exhaustion. Oh, that covers it all. Oh, you know?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
Your total existence.
You know, it's almost like poetry, and poetry goes somewhere you were in your month-long meditation, and that's where music goes too, because music is nonverbal and poetry is so minimal, it's almost nonverbal. Mm-hmm. It's just direct hits to the heart, you know. And I can remember when I was I committed to meditating twice a day for, I don't know, 10 years or whatever, and in the middle of Doors recording sessions, Robbie, the guitar player, and I would make everybody stop, and we'd go in the vocal booth and meditate for a half hour, and they tolerated it, you know. But after doing that for a long time, like you, I did have kind of some, I don't know, Kundalini stuff going on in my youth, and I don't know. We're trying to get down to what Gary Shandling's talking about, something, the truth down there in the silence. And all this stuff, this art, is a wonderful access, you know.
You know, a friend, maybe you know John O'Donohue's poems.
No, I know the name.
He's so great. He was, he's Irish, but he came to this country. I first met him in Galway. But he, was interested in kind of translating Celtic spirituality for now. And it's amazing. But he's
I'm a Celt, so.
I know it. So he was a great poet. And he died young in his 50s, some few years ago. But he wrote a really beautiful book of blessings, they're really poems, called To Bless the Space Between Us. And I thought of it. And he talks about the space, the difference when you bless the space between us, you can think of the space between us as separating us. But if you bless it, then you honor it as the space that brings us together.
That's nice.
Yeah. Isn't that nice?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Boy, I can't believe you sat for a month in silence. That's big time.
I think it may have been more than a month. Yeah, it was. It was. in the days, there'd be 2 or 3 days. He taught it in 10-day sessions. There'd be 2 or 3 days between sessions. And there we all were going through these huge changes, you know. So
yeah.
We don't want to find out who the other people we've been looking at for 10 days in silence, you know. And of course, we're all young, you know, so they look pretty good. And so, so we would be sharing stories from our lives. Ram Dass would call us the used to bees. He had just written Be Here Now. So he was always saying to us, be here now. Let go of who you used to be.
That's a good line. Oh, boy. What a blessing sitting next to him and you across the table that evening. Just
that was a great night. Yeah. And it was really Ram Dass at his best at that time in his life. In the last like 6 months or so, he really had, I shouldn't say less energy, because he always seemed to have energy pouring through him, but he couldn't talk as much, you know, and he was just weaker. So that period when you came was really great. Really great.
Yeah. KD later told me that, you know, he, previous to that, a week before, he wasn't talking to anybody for days. And, you know, he was telling jokes. It was.
Yeah. Yeah. He was amazing. Know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I miss him. But I had a dream about him recently. I've only had one dream of him. And after, you know, knowing him for 50 years and spending the last couple of years of his life with him a lot.
Right.
It's kind of funny that I haven't had, but I had one.
And there's more to come.
And in it, we were sitting in a circle, as we'd often done, like leading a workshop or a meditation or something. And there was one person between him and me. And I reached behind that person and kind of touched Ram Dass's fingers with mine, you know. And as soon as I did, I just went into like a state of such happiness and presence and calm, and everything is right.
Oh.
It's so beautiful. And then after a few minutes, I pulled my hand back and he leaned back. There's this person between us. He leaned back and I leaned back a little bit, and he looked right at me and he said, I'm here. That was it.
Nice.
That's all I needed.
Yeah. That's good.
I think he is. Yeah.
All right. So since we're telling secret dreams and a few things that we haven't said publicly, I had a dream of Ravi Shankar, who I one mm-hmm. chapter yeah. is on in this book. I'm going to say it. I might as well. I just dreamt that he French kissed me on the mouth. You know, what can I say? I mean, it's just, I'm not gay, but
so it was. What was your response in the dream?
Oh, it was, I don't know. I don't remember. The dream was just that moment. That's it. But when I woke up, I went, oh, you know, it was just, I felt blessed.
So great.
You know, like, kind of like those fingers touching.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, there's one thing I wanted to, I thought about, we didn't mention that you drew the title and the idea for the book from Gurdjieff,
right?
Meetings with Remarkable Men. And in the first chapter of that book, he talks about his father, which is cool that you talk about your mother in the first chapter. But he talks about his father, who was a poet and a storyteller, and but in the oral tradition. And he talks about his father telling the Gilgamesh a story.
Yeah.
And that in that story, the goddess Inanna gets a certain kind of tree, and she plants it, she moves it into her garden, and with the intention to carve it into a throne once it's a throne. And the tree grows and matures, but serpents and some kind of demon birds inhabit the tree. And so she's very upset about that because she wants to have this tree carved. And so Gilgamesh comes along and he slays the serpent and frees up and the bird and frees up the tree. And his companions then chop down the tree and carve its wood into a bed and a throne, which they give to Inanna. And she responds by fashioning what they call a piku and a miku, which are a drum and drumsticks as the gift.
Oh, my goodness.
For Gilgamesh. There inside meetings with remarkable men. I mean, he doesn't tell that whole story in there, but he talks about his father loving Gilgamesh. Isn't that good?
Thank you for that, Mirabai. You know, I had seen the film Meetings with Remarkable Men. Terrence Stamp was in there, and it was Peter Brook directed it, kind of a cult film. And I didn't really read the book, you know, but now I've got this little antidote from you that Meetings with Remarkable Musicians, it just hit me, you know, well, there's your title, you know. And I knew that from the movie that it was about musicians trying to play so well, they were like trying to catch God's ear, and sort of like a contest or whatever the hell. And that the whole thing gave me the idea of just a tribute to these musicians. But so Gurdjieff's dad told him this story, the Gilgamesh story.
Yeah, he would recite Gilgamesh. That was the way it was passed down.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I forget, but...
they carved it into a drum and sticks. I love it.
What? And these poets that you love are part of, like, this time. Gilgamesh has become... among some of those poets, it's gotten renewed, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's one of those stories.
I remember Bly telling some Gilgamesh stories at one of the men's conferences.
Uh-huh.
So, which I want to say, you know, I was in on that early, just like I was in Jamaica before reggae. And Robert said, you know, it was just a few of us, said, you know, if what we're doing here, you know, going out into the woods and sharing feelings like women have always done, you know, not watching sports and drinking beer, if this ever becomes a movement, we're in trouble. That's what he said. And then, bam, you know, which, you know, is a gift because it wasn't an answer to the women's movement. It was us trying to do what you guys have been doing forever, to get down to some deep feelings, you know? And of course, everything gets co-opted in America, and, you know, some feminists in Europe called Robert Hitler or whatever the hell.
Oh, God.
But, you know, it did kind of jumpstart the Million Man March for African Americans. And so, what was my train of thought? Well, just that it was empowering. And I think the patriarchy was hurting and still is hurting guys as much, you know.
Well, yeah.
Guys have to be in these roles and macho assholes, and
we just saw a lot of them on TV.
That's And, you know, I write about Joseph Campbell, and whom was wonderful. But I do think that even his main myth, that the hero's journey, the is kind of on the way out. It's that's the John Wayne one person kind of hero. The new paradigm is men and women together in groups, not in groups. One person. It's like, what's these new women politicians, Cortez and all of them?
Yeah.
You know,
the squad.
That's, you know, the Iroquois, mm-hmm. whose government we copied.
Yep.
You know, they were the real power was the grandmothers. They told who was going to be chiefs, and, you know, so that's pretty interesting.
Yes.
That's what's up ahead.
Yeah.
Look at these young kids who got so upset over the gun violence, you know. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
They were being elders. When elders are people who look after the young people, and politicians are supposed to be elders.
Yeah.
And these young teenagers were standing up. That's the future. Groups of people standing up together.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I'm off the soapbox. Sorry.
No, that was great. Just the other night, I actually didn't see it, but the Dalai Lama interviewed Greta Thunberg, and she's still probably only, I don't know, 16 or 15 or
right.
something. You know, right. But yeah, right. But there it is. And I thought that, I think it was Thich Nhat Hanh, I'm not sure, who the Vietnamese Buddhist teacher, who said that the next Buddha would not be male or female. The next Buddha would be the community of seekers. Yeah.
And did he use that word?
I'm using it. I don't know. Well, he probably did, because he probably said Sangha, which is the Buddhist Pali word for, it's usually translated as a community of seekers after truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is fun.
Circling, it is really fun.
Circling the love wagons here.
Yes. I was going to ask, what do you think you learned from doing this book? I felt like in doing that book with Ram Dass recently, that I learned a lot in the process of doing it. And since you were evoking so many people who've inspired you, I'm sure that working with all that material brought up lots for you. What do you think of it that way, as having learned something from it?
Not until now, though. I mean, I can see how working with Ram Dass, and, you know, he's definitely a year or two away from crossing over, that's a very and you're writing about crossing.
I know it.
It's a very powerful learning experience, you know. And I was very touched by that book. And I will revisit that book several more times before I cross over. Thank you for that. I don't know. I just, more than ever, maybe I've learned that we are all on the shoulders of those before us.
Mm.
So all these artists have fed me so much. And I didn't know that my love of classical music would feed my drumming, but it did. You know, I didn't see that coming, but I somehow was there. It's kind of like the beatniks were the hippies. My generation,
mm-hmm.
were on the shoulders of the beatniks. The punks are on the shoulders of the hippies. The grunge are on the shoulders of the punks. We're all, that's how it goes. And it feels good to honor those people and mention that they've fed you, because, you know, we're just channeling stuff. Maybe there's no new ideas. Isn't that a Bob Dylan line?
Probably.
Yeah. So just much more love and admiration and gratefulness for people that helped me be an artist.
Yeah. That's, well, walking each other home isn't all simultaneous. And, you know, it's those who went before us are walking us home as well. Yeah, for sure. And, well, you know, American culture hasn't really honored much those who go before. You know, it's all about the moment and what we can now create, which has been great. But
We're adolescent, you know, we've got acne and we're trying to figure out how to do this.
Yeah, I used to teach women's circles, not teach, but lead. And the Native people all, and other cultures as well, honor the ancestors, you know, those who went before. So we'd go around the circle and each woman would say her name and the name of her mother and the name of her grandmother and her great-grandmother. Very few women knew names past their grandmother. And some of them even were forgetting their grandmother's names.
So, I'm thinking of my situation, same thing. I can picture the faces, but the names are kind of. Yeah.
It's important.
It's, yeah. When
I was writing the book with Ram Dass, I kept, of course, thinking about friends who had died and then friends would die while we were writing because we were both getting so old. And so I put together, I decided to make a little table altar kind of thing with pictures of friends who had died.
Oh,
because I realized I didn't want to forget them. I think it started with me thinking, oh, is anybody going to remember me? You know, and then I thought, I better get on this. So I put these, and I started out with, there's a few pictures. And then, I'd stop by that table each day and just look at everybody and thank them for being in my life. And now it's like 3 or 4 years. And of course, at this age, you know, the table is just full of people. And including Ram Dass now. But I do think honoring those, and I love that about your book. It really is an honoring of all those musicians and other artists who have, whether they knew it or not at the time they were doing it, have passed some wisdom onto you. And I just think the whole act of writing it and doing it is important and beautiful.
And, you know, it's a sweet thing that you mentioned in one of our emails, early emails about doing this podcast, that I'm paraphrasing, but you were saying something like, well, I guess, you know, we were supposed to meet in this incarnation, you know, me and you.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm pushing 80 and you're, I know it's not polite, but we're sort of around the same age.
I'm ahead of you, my dear. Yeah.
Okay. 80, so
81.
But what a blessing that in our third act here, we're connecting. It's really good.
No, it's great. And then just a reminder, it just keeps on going, you know, every moment. It's not, you know, like kind of all downhill after a certain point.
No. Okay, well, maybe Mary Oliver can help us.
Good. She always helps.
This is it's about details and slowing down. I read this during my little poems for the pandemic. And I'm going to accompany myself with my African talking drum. Hang on. Okay. It's called The Summer Day. You know, this is, of course, the wonderful Northeastern Pulitzer poet who crossed over just a few years ago.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. the summer day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is your plan to do with your one wild, precious life?
The best.
So that's the meditation we need to do in this sequestered pandemic isolation, you know, smell the roses, of course. And, you know, I mean, incredible sadness over all the pain and death. But things that happen, there are reasons things happen. And the lesson here is, you know, the greenhouse gases are down. Okay. There's something like we come out of this. We need, let's be aware of that. You know, maybe we can view things a little differently and learn from this rough stuff. So, yeah.
John, thank you. This was so great.
Yeah. I sure hope we get to hang out in the flesh. I mean, you know, I think in a year or so that'll be happening.
Oh, I think so too.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
But thanks. This is just wonderful.
You know, I got your message, KD, sent his love. I mean, let's just close with that channel from Neem Crowley to Ram Dass to KD to you to me. Thanks for the blessing.
Yes.
Yeah.
May you continue to feel it and be happy. And as he told us, love everyone.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BeHereNow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/BeHereNow.